Welcome back in the Kia Studio, Sports Radio 92.9, The Game on a Sunday morning, the Pro Bowl Sunday morning here, taking you until 2:30, Randy McMichael, John Chuckery, 3 o'clock kickoff for the Pro Bowl today. So we thought we would bring our own Pro Bowler in. Are you, do they call you the godfather of Atlanta soccer? Is that kind of the term that I've seen before, Jason?
Some people use that, yeah.
Yes, the godfather of Atlanta soccer, our Pro Bowler, Jason Longshore, joins us in studio. Of course, you want to check him out on Twitter, at Longshoe.
The Godfather.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So Jason is going to join us here for the entire 11 o'clock hour. So we'll talk whatever. We can talk whatever we want. We can talk United. We can we can do whatever we want.
I mean, it's our show.
Yeah.
I mean. Well, it's your show according to
well,
the
yeah,
show sheet.
But I did put a pen. I did put your name in pen on the.
What's
on
going
the
on, brother? First of all, how'd you enjoy last night?
We saw you last
night.
Oh,
it was a good time last night. Yeah. Packed. Place
early,
was packed.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Godfather of soccer.
Okay, I'll take it.
All right.
I had another addition to the music theme, actually.
Is it? What is Jarrett? Is Jarrett like a capo regime, or is he like a soldier, or in the Cosa Nostra pecking order? We got to figure out where Jarrett belongs. I guess he could be senior consigliere or something like that, because he does have a senior title.
It's true. It's true. That might work.
Well, Jason, the newest addition to Atlanta United, Petey Martinez, in tow now. I did have to laugh because he took that overnight flight to get here and everything. You could tell he was worn out. I'm looking at some of the pictures people were taking, and he was like, it looked like he'd been on a plane for 51 hours straight or something like that. So on a team that is so filled with talent, we know how good a player he is. Everybody's seen highlights and everything. How does he fit? What is it that you think they are looking for out of Petey Martinez to be on this team?
Well, it's kind of like what you were talking about with the Braves. You want them to go all in right now because they have an opportunity. Atlanta United won something last year, and they're still upgrading with a player like Petey Martinez. He's more of a finished product than we've generally seen with these types of signings. He's in his prime. He's not a player on the way up. I mean, he was South American Player of the Year. You know, he is at his peak right now in the Argentina national team. Haven't had a player like that in this league. I think he just elevates everything for this club right now.
So who does he take away minutes from then?
Well, we have to wait and see what's going to happen this week with the transfer window. Because if it's Miguel Almiron going and Petey Martinez coming in, that's an easy replacement. Now, they're going to play different positions. Petey Martinez generally plays on the wing. He can play centrally, but he generally plays on the wing with River Plate. So we'll see where Frank DeBoer looks at him.
If he's at the wing, and say, for instance, you do get this thing where Almiron is gone, who's going to play in Almiron's spot?
That's a question. Could be Ezekiel Barco.
Because when you talked about this before, you said Barco could possibly move into that 10 spot.
I think what you're going to have to figure out is in Frank DeBoer's system, who's better out wide, who's better centrally. And what we saw from Barco at the end of the season last year, where we were seeing a little bit of a two-way game, more defensive work from him, probably a little more likely to see him central. But it's going to be fitting into the system because there's a few differences in it. In Tata Martino's system, your wingers still had defensive responsibilities. In Frank DeBoer's system, not as much. It's more of a true 4-3-3 with them up higher in the formation in the attack. They're not coming back as much.
So, fair or unfair, in some ways, could this be a make-or-break year for Barco?
Unfair. I think he's still really young in the grand scheme of things. I think that
How about for Atlanta United?
Maybe. Now, that's probably a little bit closer to it. I think you start to wonder, okay, are we going to be able to sell him on for a profit at the end? Or do we need to cut our losses here? That's going to be the question. But again, we don't really know until this week's over, because there's a chance if Miguel Almiron doesn't sell for that price tag that you then have to find a loan for Barco. And you want to find a loan for him to go somewhere and improve and come back in a better position.
Jay, explain the loan thing. Because, you know, when I think a lot of people, myself included, when they say loan, is it more or less just for a specific time? Because if he comes back, you still have the four designated players, right?
Well, it's tricky because you have four designated players right now. You can only have three.
Correct.
There's no chance to buy anybody down or anything like that. So you have two solutions. You need to get Miguel Almiron off your roster. You need to get Ezekiel Barco off your roster. And you can get them off your roster in a permanent basis if you transfer them, if you sell them.
Okay.
Or on a temporary basis if you loan them. And in Barco's situation, because you're likely not going to loan Miguel Almiron, you're going to sell him. in Barco's situation, you have to find a club that will take on his salary. So that's going to limit it a little bit. There's going to be some clubs who would love to have him in their team. They're not going to pay that salary because it's a big salary for a South American club. So you're going to have to figure that out. I think you're probably going to do it on a year-long loan with an option to recall him in the summer window. Because if you don't sell Miguel Almiron in this window, you're probably going to sell him in the summer where there are more clubs looking to buy.
And that's what I was going to ask you is if you sell Barco, if you will, say Almiron does stay here and he goes down for 6 weeks. Yeah, does that give them the ability to bring a Barco back onto this roster?
Yeah, you're going to want to have a recall option in here. You don't want it to be a year-long loan where you can't bring him back because you don't know what's going to happen long-term with Miguel.
But that's a good problem to have.
It's
though,
a great problem.
I mean, that's the kind of – I mean, that's first-world problems, as we say, right?
Absolutely. I mean, but what I love about it, too, is Atlanta is making a point of this, that it's time for the league to look to grow. Is it time to go to four designated players? Is it time to expand – you know, the salary threshold for the allocation money to buy people down.
But you say that. Are other franchises really looking at the – I mean,
some are.
I'm not pretending to be any kind of MLS expert, but I don't see these kinds of stories about other MLS franchises. Maybe that's not fair, but there's not enough other franchises that feel like they have first world problems compared to what Atlanta United does.
I think it's like anything else where you've got – some clubs who are trying to lead the way in terms of spending. And you have the LA Galaxy right now with four designated players, but they have one who is just barely over that threshold. So they can rework a contract, add an extra year, then buy him down. They can work on that contract-wise. But they're in that situation, too. There's other clubs like Toronto who have spent a lot of money. LAFC can spend a lot of money. New York City can spend a lot of money. Miami, when they come in, they're going to want to spend a lot of money. But you have some clubs who don't want to spend much money. You have a bunch in the middle, though, that are kind of waiting to see. And one that I think is in that boat is New England. New England with Robert Kraft is one that has to be looking at this with Arthur Blank, watching what he's doing and seeing, why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we making this money? Because we can do this. And they're now investing in a training facility, and they're talking about bigger transfer fees.
I love Mr. Kraft. I think he's one of the best owners in sports. I don't think he really cares a lot about their team.
I think his kids do. I think it's almost like that same type of thing here.
Is it more of a hobby for him?
Well, he bought in the beginning. Yeah. So I'll give him a lot of credit because in the early days where you didn't have a lot of people who were willing to cut that check to get things off the ground, and then in the middle where it was dicey for a minute, he stuck with it. Mm-hmm. And he actually invested in San Jose for a little while to keep that afloat. I think it's more than a hobby. But I think he's also went through those really lean times, so he has a different perspective.
Color analyst for Atlanta United, Jason Longshore, hanging out with John Chuckery, Randy McMichael in the Kia Studios for this hour, an entire hour we've got him for.
Yes.
So let me ask you this question, and Randy, I'll tie it into the NFL. Because of, and I'll say the way they did it, the 49ers did a lot of shady stuff with their deals, the Charles Haley deal and things like that. That basically created a salary cap in the NFL is because of, well, we'll give you $100,000, Charles Haley, if you come play here. And then if you get two sacks, you get $4 million. If you get three sacks, you get five.
Right.
So they put all these creative things in. And what I'm not trying to compare that to Atlanta United, but my point to all of this is, will the way Atlanta United does business cause MLS to have to rethink some of their model about salary caps or floors? Because you're going to have – I mean, what it looks like to me is you really are going to have some really haves, kind of like our radio station, some real haves.
I was waiting
and
for
a lot of have-nots. Oh, yeah, yeah. And I'm full – you got media guy over here. He doesn't know about all that. But you have real haves and real have-nots. I don't know that that's good for the way MLS is trying to grow its popularity in the United States.
It's a good question. I think you're in a situation where the league has –
I don't know what to do with my hands, by the way.
Yeah, I see. You're just moving them around. Yeah.
Well, we've talked about it in terms of MLS 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. And I've kind of looked at Atlanta and what is happening here as MLS 3.0. 1.0 was just getting off the ground, surviving, just keeping the doors open. 2.0 was a combination of David Beckham coming to the league, changing the perspective of MLS in this country and in Canada, and also adding Toronto and Seattle and Portland, like soccer hubs. And clubs that came in with some buzz and a soccer atmosphere. 3.0 is you can make money at this and the business is wide open if you are aggressive to do it. And Arthur and Darren and Carlos have decided from day one, we're going to spend, but we're going to spend smartly. And we're going to do this for the long haul. What's next is the question. And I think you're starting to look at some ownership groups who are wondering, do we have the juice to keep going with where this is going? Is it time for us to sell? Because you're getting values pretty high right now. I mean, let's talk Newcastle right now. There's a club that Arthur Blank was linked to at one time, which was crazy. He immediately said, no, I'm not interested in buying Newcastle. They're going to sell for about £330 million right now. That's the number that's being talked about. Atlanta United was valued by Forbes at $330 million 2 years in. And that's not even taking into account 2018, a full year at Mercedes-Benz Stadium with all the revenues that came in. You're starting to see the league jump up into that type of category. And you have some owners who bought in really cheap and went through a lot of hard times to get here might say, this is my time to cash out and let somebody come in with more resources than me.
A guy, you know, Yosef, he just got the extension he wanted. And to me, it seems like he just likes being here. I heard you talking about he's been overseas and all that. He just didn't like it. He enjoys being here, you know, being a member of Atlanta United. With his new contract extension, is he the highest paid player in the league?
We don't know. And we won't know till the players union puts those numbers out. And they'll put those out, I think it's usually April or early May.
Okay.
It's possible he might have taken a little bit more security in terms of years and brought the number down a little bit. Mm-hmm. We're also waiting to see what Zlatan Ibrahimovic's deal is going to be for his 1 year.
Zlatan. Is the extension that he got, is that typical for the MLS, that length of an extension?
Nope. It's a little different. You don't normally see that length of a contract. And it's something, we don't know the lengths of contracts. This is something I think MLS would really benefit from being a little more transparent and open. Like we talk about NFL deals, we talk about NBA deals. The trade deadline has become a huge thing with the NBA.
Right.
This is the transfer window where in England right now, people are losing their minds before Thursday because that's the last day clubs can add players. I mean, people are going to be following players' agents to clubs. If you have a player going to take their medical tests, it's chaos. Here, we don't really know enough to have these types of conversations. It's all speculation on our part. And I think that's something MLS is losing out on a little bit. They could benefit from being a little more media friendly on salary cap and allocation money and how it all works and just make it easier for all of us to understand.
When we get back, as Jason Longshore joins us in studio, I want to talk to Jason about a couple of things. I want to piggyback something off of Joseph Martinez. I want to get his thoughts on. And I also want to ask him a little bit about Arthur and maybe something Randy and I have talked about in the future. Jason Longshore is joining us in studio for the entire hour till 12 o'clock, hanging out with Randy and John, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Ricky, first of all, where did you learn to drive like that?
The car. Car handled real good.
Can you speak up, Ricky?
The car, it handled real good. I felt like I was on a spaceship, and I'm not sure what to do with my hands.
Be good just to hold them down by your side. Yeah, great.
Well, we're real happy.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, back in the Kia Studios, Sunday morning. John Chuckery, Randy McMichael, Jason Longshore hanging out with us, hanging out in studio with us for the entire 11 o'clock hour. Our thanks to Jason for getting up and coming in.
See, I had an addition to the music theme, and it would be a lot better than this.
Okay.
And it actually would be really appropriate. Mike Patton, singer of Faith No More and other projects.
Okay.
They covered Commodores, Easy Like Sunday Morning.
Okay.
Brian, Making a Request. Can we make that happen?
Yes.
Who?
Brian, yeah.
Mike.
Now,
isn't that a decent defensive coordinator for the Packers?
Or who? Mike Patton?
Yeah.
I thought he was a producer here on the station.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
So who we got? What's the name of this band here, Jason?
Faith No More.
Faith No More.
Okay.
You've never heard that? You've heard of that song, Epic, that they do?
Probably. Once I'm not good with the names. As soon as I hear things, I'm good.
Yeah. But you got to grab their cover of Easy.
Now, understand, you just made Brian do some work. So that's he's not a senior producer.
Hey, he asked me to come in and do some work. So, you know, I figured we could play this game.
Listen, I that's why I have to give Brian the music theme and rundown, 7 days in advance.
I'll send you an invoice, Jason. Don't worry about it.
Fair enough.
Get around to it. So
I'll bring you some halls next time.
I want to follow up with you on a couple things about Joseph Martinez. Yeah, I mean, you got doing errands for Randy.
He's not doing no damn errands.
You gave him Halls. I gave him a bottle of water. You know, so everybody treating our NFL media.
I forgot. I chose. I didn't drive today, man. I had to Uber to work, so I left all my snacks and stuff.
Why'd you Uber to work?
Oh, because Donna's going to pick me for work. We got to go to my godson's birthday party today.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so she's coming to get you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Two things I want to follow up with you about Joseph Martinez. One is the likelihood of playing out a contract that long in this league where you just don't see that kind of deal. But the second thing is that, and I know you've talked about it with us on the show, but the reality in the world of where Joseph Martinez is thought, not just, we know what he is in MLS. I'm sure he has, I'm sure as much as he loves Atlanta, I'm sure he's got some bigger aspirations as well. But where he fits into the landscape of world leagues.
So Joseph's unique. I think Joseph is not as worried about that landscape. I think he wants to be comfortable and happy. And there's such a big part of him and representing his country of Venezuela. They've never been to a World Cup, and this is probably the greatest generation of talent they've ever had. Mm. This is their best shot in their history to get to a World Cup. 2022 is not that far away when you talk about qualifying because it's a slog through South America. You play the other nine countries twice. It's a home and away. You're playing 18 games over a couple of years to get there. It's a lot easier for him to do that from Atlanta. It's an easier flight. You're not coming across an ocean.
Right.
It's just easier for him to be that focal point for that team, especially with everything going on in Venezuela right now. I think he takes that very, very seriously. So that factors into it. That's a little unique for him. The likelihood of playing the contract out, I think we'll have to see where MLS is in 5 years. And I don't know. I honestly don't know. You get a very weird perception around the world of Major League Soccer right now. We were just talking about it. You have Alphonso Davies playing for Bayern Munich right now after, you know, he's a teenager. His contract was bought for $13 million by Bayern Munich. He goes straight into the lineup in the first division in Germany. That's never really happened for players from MLS. Miguel Almiron's going to change that narrative. But you also see the flip side out of Argentina. Pity Martinez signs to come here, and Argentine media is like, why are you going to the United States? Why are you going to Major League Soccer? Nobody really understands where MLS fits into it. I don't know if MLS understands that right now. I think it's a top 10 league in the world. I think it could easily be around five pretty quickly.
Wow.
And that's the type of move we're about to see. That's where the league's headed.
So it's kind of a shock that PT that he signed here.
Some people thought it was, but when you look at the Argentine economy right now,
it's bad. The
numbers weren't coming from European teams. This is his chance to make a big raise, make a big transfer fee for his club. Why are you going to stick and wait for that European deal that hasn't come for him?
Well,
yet?
And I'll throw it like this too. I get these guys' loyalty to where they come from. It's still coming to the United States of America and making millions of dollars.
I absolutely. Mean,
there is something to be said about still coming to this country and making lots of money. And if there's people that are willing to pay you, I mean, with all due respect to Argentine, and I know how loyal those guys are to their home nations and stuff, but I think part of that is probably, and I may be wrong, of Joseph Martinez is, you know, it's pretty good to be in Atlanta, Georgia, in a culturally diverse city, in America, in the United States, making a lot of money and being a great player on a great team versus, yeah, I maybe can play in a bigger, more recognizable league, but I'm a small fish in a big pond at that point. And I think there maybe is some allure to that. And maybe that's where the perception of, how do you change up the perception of MLS and things like that? You're not going to change up MLS, Jason, by MLS clubs and just throw big money in and just, you know, no. They put bad money out there to guys or whatever like that. You know, that never works in any sport. But there is some allure to all those things that go along with coming to the United States and getting a chance to be here.
And now it's more appealing to younger players in their prime. That's the big difference is Beckham was kind of a special case when he came just a little over 10 years ago now because the celebrity was a big thing for him as well. He came just, I think, at 31 years old. But what you were generally seeing when that type of money started to be spent, 35-year-olds coming with a year or two. And Darren Eales said from day one, we're not going to sign guys who have no resale value. We're not going to sign guys basically to dead money. They're going to come here and they're going to sell shirts. That's great, but that doesn't help that perception of the league. Now you're seeing Petey Martinez come at 25. You're seeing a player show up after winning South American Player of the Year. That's a big deal going forward. And if you can get the best talent from this hemisphere, forget Europe for right now, but if you get the best talent out of South America who decides to come here, improve their level, play in a competitive league that people are starting to recognize, hey, this is challenging,
right,
and then get those deals to Europe, it's a good intermediary step for MLS, and I think that's where you're at right now.
When you Mike, everybody, they talk about Bello and Carl and all these young players, will they be more in the starting 11, or would you see more of them coming off the bench like they did last year?
That's a good question. Bello's got a clear path right now.
Right.
You know, Greg Garza being traded to FC Cincinnati, there was a reason for that, and his name's George Bello. You know, Bello has the opportunity, if he grabs that starting spot, to play as much as he, you know, wants to this year, if the level is there. Carlton's a little bit different because it's crowded in his position, and he has to continue to show that physically he can handle that level. Don't think it's anything to do with his skill level. He has a special skill set. But physically, is he ready for that type of league like MLS? I thought he showed a lot in USL at the end of the season last year. He showed that he could really put the team on his back at times, things we hadn't seen from him as much. Chris Gosselin, Patrick Okonkwo, there's more guys coming through the academy, and that's that step. You know, from the academy to MLS, it's a big jump. USL is a big part of that to get professional games and understand what it's like to be a professional, but there's still a big gap. It's a hard move to go straight from the academy to the pros.
Joined by Jason Longshore in studio here on Randy McMichael and John Chuck around Sunday morning here as we're talking about Atlanta United. Has Atlanta United also then kind of led the way with the under 18 or under 16 development types of leagues as well?
They're starting to. For a new team, and when you look at the other teams that have come into MLS in the last 5 years, Atlanta's leading the way by far. And Miami's trying to replicate some of that. Miami's trying to launch an academy a full year before they hit the field. Atlanta was the first one to do that. Minnesota isn't producing anything out of their academy right now. LAFC started kind of slow with theirs. New York City starting to sign a few homegrowns, but they're not factoring in. You're starting to see a lot of talent come out of here. Atlanta was really smart from day one to partner with Georgia United, which was a club that was doing really well producing young talent, and bring them into the fold. So you had those guys come straight into a professional academy.
What do we need to look forward to for this CONCACAF thing? I'm reading up on stuff. Is it Herediano?
Herediano.
Herediano. They're one of the better teams over there, 27 club championships and all that.
Yeah.
What do you – I was reading somewhere it says that Atlanta's favored over them?
Yeah, because they are a smaller club, Randy, out of Costa Rica.
First of all, Randy, we need to find out, is Jason going down to Costa Rica to broadcast?
We're hoping.
All that?
Why wouldn't he?
We're hoping. Right. If we can broadcast from there, that's the problem.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is a stadium
Pin cans and string to, you know.
It's about 8,500 seats,
whoa,
I think, outside of San Jose, Costa Rica.
Uh-huh.
Herediano's not the biggest club in Costa Rica. They're probably the third biggest. But they're the defending champs in Costa Rica right now.
The way they're saying is like they're the powerhouse. Like they're
Saprissa
a powerhouse.
Saprissa is bigger. Uh-huh. Alajuelense is bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But Herediano right now is a
challenge.
So would
that require a 2-week scouting trip to go down there and check it all
you
out?
No, they're playing right now. The league's going on in Costa Rica. So I'm just saying.
Well, let's talk about the CONCACAF for just a minute. One of the knocks, I guess if you will, one of the talk about, and I think we talked about this with Toronto, was that. Coming off of what was considered to be the greatest season in the history of MLS a couple of years ago when they won the MLS title, that they used a lot of their resources to try to win CONCACAF at the expense of their MLS season. And they certainly, in their MLS, if you will, I don't know what, in their footprint, took a definite step back this past season. Is there a fear of that with Atlanta? Is Atlanta United a lot more in to try to get the CONCACAF, and are they willing to sacrifice some MLS for that?
I think Atlanta looked ahead when they launched the USL team last year, and I think that happened because you wanted to prepare more guys for those MLS games early on when you're in CONCACAF. Because, I mean, let's look at the schedule. You're playing on the 21st and the 28th of February. After that game on the 28th, that's a Thursday night. You're going to D.C. on Sunday to open the MLS season. You're probably not going to see the same starting lineup in those two games. So you're going to have an Andrew Carlton, a Jose Hernandez at left back. You're going to have some of these guys step up. The USL team and being played the way it was last year, where it was about getting those guys minutes, That was part of that preparation. Toronto's USL team had generally been a place for academy players to play. It was kind of random. It was more like a JV team where it's just getting guys minutes as opposed to preparing them for something. I think Atlanta's looked ahead and looked at what Toronto did last year and looked at the struggles they had. They've improved the depth. I think Breck Shea was a signing specifically because you needed more depth. You needed some experience for CONCACAF Champions League. Toronto had injuries all at one position, and that was the biggest problem they had. They had four injuries at center back. Most teams carry four or five center backs. You go into the final of CONCACAF Champions League playing Michael Bradley, a holding midfielder, and Gregory Vanderveel, a right back, at center back, and you're going to struggle in that situation. Those injuries lingered all year. I think Toronto's had some other issues as well that's coming out now. You've had players kicked out of training camp because they had a supposed altercation with their manager. You have an agent for one of their top players right now posting pictures of being in Saudi Arabia, but it's a picture off of Google image search. It's kind of crazy. You have their top three guys going into the final year of their deal.
When we get back, as we're joined by Jason Longshore in studio, I want to ask Randy, I want to ask him something that you and I have discussed regarding Arthur Blank and both of these franchises. We'll get his thoughts. Next is Jason Longshore, continues to join us in studio till 12 o'clock. Randy McMichael, John Chuckery in the Key Studio Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio, 92.9
The Game.
Turn the lights on, baby.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Welcome back in the Key Studios. Per Jason Longshore's request, as he is hanging out in studio with us. Another 18 minutes here. Randy McMichael, John Chuckery with you. We're going all the way till 2:30 when we take you right into Pro Bowl pregame coverage, 3 o'clock kickoff. So it is your home for SB 53 in the ATL. Our producer, Brian, our senior sports anchor, here on his last day.
Senior sports anchor. Get it right, man.
Yeah.
All right. Get that man his title.
Yeah. He's our other senior sports anchor that doesn't have any bodies along I-20, but that's a different story.
There's some out there.
Anyway, Jason, thank you for coming and hanging out with us.
Anytime.
By the way, I guess there was a leak that it looks like February 15th we will see the new kits for Man United.
Maybe. I don't know if that was an accurate leak.
Okay. So we don't know if that's...
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
What are the kits? I mean...
They got some new kits.
Yeah, just stay away from the peach ones.
That's you didn't like the peach?
That's just raggedy. I like the black.
You know, like the actual five stripes?
Yeah, I like... That's my favorite.
The black and red stripe?
Yes. I love that one.
You're going to have a new primary kit. I don't think it's going to be a big difference. Right. I think you're going to stick to some version of stripes. I don't know. I don't know anything, but I think that's what it'll be. That's kind of iconic at this point.
You know how that works. You have to change it up just enough to get everybody has to go buy it.
Yeah, go buy it.
Of course.
Yes, yes.
So I want to ask you, Jason, this is something that Randy and I have discussed several times, and I don't try to bring it up in a morbid way, but you know, Arthur Blank is a guy now in his early 70s, prostate cancer survivor. Now we know he's in the middle of getting divorced. And Randy and I have talked about the idea of what the succession plan is for the Atlanta Falcons. I don't know that his kids want to be involved. You know, we've seen Gail Benson, Randy, down in New Orleans. She's right. Taken over the Saints. I mean, yeah, there's been some help. Georgia Frontieri, right? I mean, didn't she took over the Rams when hubby died?
The other one.
Yeah. So I don't know that we have that, and we certainly now, Arthur doesn't have necessarily a – looks like a wife to have in a succession plan. But I'm curious what your thoughts are about what could how long you think the Arthur train lasts. I mean, I'm curious as to your thoughts about where the franchise is. You know, 10 years from now, is Arthur Blank still the owner of Atlanta United? Because if he's not the owner of the Falcons, I don't know that he's the owner of the Atlanta United. I think they both go in a package.
I don't know. You have to remember, Arthur's son, Josh, has been involved from day one with Atlanta United. He is at Elon now. He's in college, but he was a top-level player. But he's been involved from day one. He's been around everything behind the scenes. You have a different level because of that, because he grew up playing, because the family's been around soccer from playing from day one. It's a different feel a little bit, and I'm not around it with the Falcons. I don't know how that went down, but in this case, I've watched Arthur and his family really take this on emotionally. There is a deep emotional connection to the soccer team. And I think that would continue. I don't know what that plan is. I think we've started to see maybe some of the steps to it with Steve Cannon coming in, with A and B kind of growing a little bit as an overall organization. And I think that'll continue.
Yeah, and I mean, Steve has taken over everything. You know, I don't know. Some people may not know. Arthur owns PGA Tour Superstores, obviously all of his charities and things like that. So Cannon has come in to run everything Arthur blank related. So it's not just Falcons or United. And that's an interesting point that you bring up in there. I would imagine, you know, Randy, we talked about taking over ownership in the NFL is a whole different animal. Like, there is a lot of intricacies about who can and can't own an NFL franchise and what you got to have and not have. And they've changed the rules to make sure, like, the Rooney family stayed in Pittsburgh and all that. Don't know that MLS has any kind of strict succession plan. As long as you got the money to pony up, I would imagine that they're probably pretty good.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if this has come up in MLS history, and I don't think it has. So I don't know what that plan is. I'm sure it's something that's been talked about, because right now Atlanta is – it's pushing the league forward. I mean, I think everybody in this league, and the league office especially, is sitting here wondering how it's going to continue in Atlanta and if everybody else is going to jump on board with where Atlanta's taking the league. So I don't think they want to lose that in any way.
Jay, going back to that, on the field or whatever, you know, new manager, Frank DeBoer, he was introduced a couple weeks ago and everything. We were all up there. What, if any, adjustment do these players have to, you know, now that Tata's gone and you're going to, like you say, kind of the same system, but a couple of tweaks here. What, if any, you know, hangups might it be with the players?
It's a great question, and it's something I think we'll pretty quick once everybody gets on the field. It's a
different. I asked him that question last week when he was on the air with me.
Huh?
Nothing. No.
It's a different mentality, and I think that's the biggest difference. Is just because, you know, Frank DeBoer is not going to have that father figure type of vibe with the players.
And
that
could
Tata
that,
Martino
that okay? Yeah. Like, just like that, could that be the biggest issue? Could it be a point where you might maybe push your players away?
It's possible. I mean, you never know, because anytime you have a coaching change, you know, sometimes you could have the right guy on paper, everything works, the resume looks great, he's got the experience you want to see, and it just doesn't click personality-wise. We've seen that in every team and every sport. That's always a possibility. I think what he brings to the table with his time – obviously at Ajax and in the Netherlands, and his development there is something Atlanta wants. I think his time in Barcelona is critical as well, because he has that appreciation, that understanding of the Latin culture that, you know, maybe every Dutch player or manager doesn't have. And I think that's going to help him here a lot.
I want to ask you about the MLS. We were talking a little bit about this earlier. And we're seeing plenty of expansion, you know, for MLS. I get, obviously, Atlanta, probably Minnesota, Miami. Does MLS make sense in some of these expansions like Cincinnati? I know their club down there has done pretty well, but Cincinnati or Nashville, while I understand expansion, it's always a matter of, and I say this about the NHL, I think the NHL should contract half the teams in NHL, because I just, one, don't think there's enough talent to go around, and two is you've just got too many markets that just – don't need a hockey franchise. Is there a fear with MLS that the same thing can kind of happen to them?
When you look at the leading teams in MLS right now, not just on the field, but in the stands, you know, on the business side of it, it's the newer teams. I think that's the difference. When you had new teams come into the NHL, maybe they pushed things forward for a year, 2 years, while you had that new car smell.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you look at the leading teams in this league. It's Atlanta. It's Seattle. Orlando has drawn really well, but they've got to get the product better on the field. It's been bad, and it's turning people away at the moment. New York City did really well at the beginning. Same thing. It's got to continue to improve. But the problem franchises have been generally the ones that have been around from day one.
Like Columbus and things like that?
And Columbus is an interesting case, because they're getting a new lease on life. And Arthur Blank had a big hand in that, bringing the Browns ownership in to save it in Columbus. And Arthur talked to them. He told us that when Mike and I sat down with him this week. That's a
so Jimmy Haslam
deal.
Can screw up another franchise.
Well,
because they'll put D down. Hopefully
I was going to say
D down there.
But here's the thing: you look at what they had before with Anthony Precourt, who was basically just going to pick the team up and move it to Austin, Texas, and really
if he didn't get a new stadium, right?
Even think that played into it. I think he just wanted out.
Okay.
So now you get some investment coming in. You also have that paired up with a family that has been involved in the crew from day one. the doctor, the family that has had the team doctor involved with the team from day one is involved in this ownership group. So you have a local tie to.
Randy, if Jimmy and Dee want to go down to Columbus and hang out down there, that'll be the best thing that ever happened to the Browns, is just let Dorsey run the franchise. Yes, but that's a whole separate discussion.
Jay, coming into this season, Atlanta United, they're the prohibitive favorites. We know that they're the best team in that league or whatever. Who can trip them up, possibly?
There's still a lot of time in this transfer window, and that's what I'm kind of waiting to see, because when you look at the rest of the Eastern Conference right now, you have the New York Red Bulls who won the Supporters' Shield. Their top player, Kaku, has been pretty clear on social media, and his agent's been pretty clear in the media saying he wants out. He wants to go to Club America in Mexico City, and there's been a lot of accusations back and forth about how he hasn't been treated very well by the club. Toronto, you've got three guys going into the final year of their deal. You've got Giovinco's agent chirping a lot. Josie Altidore says he'd like to go to Mexico. Those are the top two teams to challenge. They've got a lot of issues right now.
So basically you're saying they're playing against themselves.
It's wide open, but you've got to continue to push to do it, because you're going to be competing on CONCACAF. You're going to be competing for a Supporters' Shield. You're going to be competing for MLS Cup.
Right.
You have a lot of things to balance.
Jason, good stuff.
Appreciate you, Jay. Yeah,
thanks always
for coming
fun,
and
guys.
Hanging out with us. So some good talk there. Randy and I will be back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Rick and John, middays from 10 till...
Now you recognize us, Brian? Jason Longshore, we're hanging out a few more minutes with Randy and John. Sports Radio 92.9. So we did have some fun. We saw Jason last night at Game Bowl, Randy.
Good times, man.
And I tried to buy Randy a shot last night, Brian. Remember? I mean, I was willing to come off the hip, buy a shot. Randy was, I don't know where, Randy was on radio, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. We lost Randy for a while. But yeah, Chuckery had that twinkle in his eye about halfway through the night. But then he realized he had his daughter. So
I wasn't going to let you get all go ham with her there. But no, I had to. That, like, in a 20-minute span, I did, went on with Bunk and Jarvis. And I had to run back over to the laser tag with my son, and then had to run back over to do something. So I was all over the place. But I was looking for you most of the night, though.
Well, I got there. We had dinner after a half hour of sitting in a booth, but that's a separate story. And we had dinner, started playing some games. Well, actually, before we played some games, I went over and said hey to everybody and was on with freaking Hugh for a few minutes and, you know, went from there. How was your night, Jason?
It was good. It was good to talk to some of the listeners who came out. There was a lot of Atlanta United fans out there last night.
Oh, yeah.
That was really cool.
Well, you
see.
Know if they support the station, that's part of it, that you know you're going to get a good fan base of things that we support as well.
That's what's been so cool about this whole process, is seeing so many people who have been in the soccer community that I've known who have come over to the station and listened to everybody here all the time now. It's really cool.
Did you drink any Hey Yo Ale?
I've had some. I did not have some last night, no.
I tried, Randy. I was trying to set up a stand out front for our bottled water, Mac and Z water, but it didn't work out. I tried to sell some bottles of it, but then I had to pay a guy to take some off my hands, so I didn't quite
I need
work
to see
out.
The label of this.
You know what? I tried to print the labels, but my Epson color printer ran out of ink, and it made it tough to put the labels on there. So, yeah, I had to, because I had to cover up the where it said Crystal and all that other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the bottles of water. So.
Again.
Yeah. And we were right by the Chattahoochee, so it made it easy to fill them all up. So. Jason, appreciate it, buddy. Thanks for coming and hanging out with us today.
Anytime, y'all.
Appreciate you,
always
Jay,
fun
always,
hanging
man.
Out with you guys.
Randy and I are going to look to some of the top games in college football for 2019. The Athlon Sports has put out a list. More specifically, Brian gave us a list of all this, so we'll talk about that next.